The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
What's going on, WrestleCast fam? This is your boy, Sean, and we're back with The Push. My co-hosts today are...
Benny, also known as Owiga Las Voces.
DJ Nice One checking in, what it do?
And Dwayne, aka The Libra Icon.
Oh, all right, fellas. We're back, and we're looking at the last week in professional wrestling. We're going to hit some news. We're going to hit briefly on some things that went on Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and AEW last week. And then we're going to close by paying special tribute to the first ever African-American WCW Heavyweight Champion of the World, Mr. Ron Simmons. We're going to take a look back at his reign as champion. All right. So, guys, to jump on in, we're going to go back and look at some news from the last week. Starting off, let's talk about WWE and these ratings, yo. Continuously going down the tank. And news popped out last week is that WWE's TV partners aren't happy. And they're going to start looking for less rates on the next TV deal, excuse me, if ratings don't improve. So, hey, what's the deal, fellas? Is it really trouble time for WWE?
Not yet. I mean, they probably won't even start negotiating those deals for at least another 2 years because this is the first year of a five-year deal. So they have time to get this right. They also have the ability to get this right, but they haven't displayed anything as far as that goes. But nah, not yet. I don't think it's anything for them to worry about. But Nick Aldis was right. I will say that much.
Oh, talk about that a little bit.
Okay. So Bruce Pritchard apparently ran off at the mouth about Nick Aldis, who y'all might know as the former Magnus from TNA. He is actually the NWA world champion right now, and he spent the last couple years bringing some prestige back to that belt and to that organization. And Bruce basically said, Nick Aldis doesn't have the it factor. Now, I'm not the biggest Aldis fan in the world, but you feel his presence when you watch Power. And as y'all know, I've seen every last one of those episodes. So he definitely has something. Is a Rock Austin type? No. But there is a certain class, there is a certain prestige that he brings. Now, bringing that back to the current subject, Nick took exception to those comments, and he basically said, your opinion of me is low, kind of like Raw's ratings, and he basically tweeted the opinions of a bunch of people who had positive things to say about himself being Aldis. And so they went back and forth a couple times. That was basically it.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on that because that's basically what's missing on WWE TV right now. Like you said, Nick Aldis is probably not at The Rock or Austin's level and, you know, eye-catching, just, you know, need to see that type of level. But he is somebody of interest. And when I've seen him on TV, I'm intrigued. And that's one thing that's missing from WWE TV outside of NXT is something or someone you want to see on a weekly basis that brings your eyes to the screen.
One of the great things about Aldis is that he makes the championship feel valued and important. And I don't think we get that enough from either of the main two organizations with any of their champions, with any of their champions. I mean, I know the belt is supposed to be a prop, but I don't feel like it should be presented that way. I mean, the only person I can think of in either major organization who treats the belt as something important is Cody and that belt that he bought for $5.99 at Kmart on a closeout sale. But I mean, all this just brings a certain prestige, a certain aura that, yes, I am the champion and this championship means something. And I think that that's something that's sorely lacking.
Yeah, I like Nick. He definitely has that old school swagger where, you know, he dresses the part, speaks the part, and he definitely is I would put him in, like, the same category as, like, a Cody or a Seth Rollins or a Drew Mack, somehow like that. You know, obviously, yeah, he's not Rock or Austin, but there's not too many people that are Rock or Austin. So, but as far as the ratings go, I mean, they've got to make some changes soon. But as for like their TV deals, I agree. Like they got time to get it together because I, you know, right now during the pandemic, I'm sure they're not going to go super hard on them. But once this is over, I don't know how long the TV deals was standing, but they're going to do something. I'm sure that's why they're starting to trickle in McMahons here and there now, which always happens when ratings get super low.
So I'm thinking that we still on the TV, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm thinking I'm with Benny on this one. They do have time, but they really need to develop a top guy that's marketable, that's, you know, because John Cena is done, you know that. And of course, you know, with the pandemic that's going on right now, that's affecting everything as well. But there's still time, like you said, you know, it's a 5-year deal, it's only a year or two. But, you know, if there's an opt-out clause with these tanking ratings, then I'm sure that these networks are going to be like, yeah, we're done. I'm sure there's some kind of escape clause in it because it, as of right now, you know, it's may do what you have, but it's a sinking ship at the moment.
Just as a kind of a side note, WWE had their shareholders call this past week, and you know Vince McMahon makes some interesting comments on those, skating around the truth. I think one of my highlights was when someone asked him why Paul Heyman was fired, his legit answer was Paul Heyman was good creatively and left it at that. Didn't say anything else. Shade. But somebody asked him about the low ratings and what could be done to fix the issue. And Vince McMahon's answer was that the pandemic is affecting the product, the loss of the live crowd, and they need to make new stars. To me, fellas, all that just sounds like excuses. You know, I feel like you can put on a quality product without the crowd. I mean, everybody's sitting at home. So you got an opportunity for more eyeballs. So it can't be about the crowd. And not having a crowd doesn't keep you from putting together a compelling product. So, yeah, how do you feel about Vince McMahon's comments on, or I'll say comments, but excuses on why the ratings are falling?
like you said, everybody's at home. That's why I can't get into this whole, you know, we need the crowds and blah, 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 and this, that, and the other, and it's the pandemic, this, that, and the other. Okay. You're missing Roman Reigns. Big deal. And, I mean, people can say that I'm saying that because I'm not a Roman fan, whatever. But, shoot, those 20,000 people that are in the stands watching the show would be a pretty significant bump in your ratings considering where they are now. And, like, the whole thing of building new stars, they've needed to build new stars for 6 years. The Roman thing, sorry, Roman, has obviously not worked out the way that they wanted it to. It's like Cena said in the promo in 2017. Cena wouldn't have had to come back if Roman was doing his job. And that was when there were crowds and before the pandemic. So, no, I'm not buying this whole thing with Vince. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree. The biggest, I mean, they've had multiple opportunities to build stars and they just never do it. They, like, I agree. They put all their money in the Roman Reigns bag and it just ain't really panned out. I mean, Roman's become a pretty decent star, but, you know, from a drawing perspective, he's not drawn anywhere near like a Cena or a Rock or Austin or everyone like that. But, you know, I do agree that, you know, that he's making up excuses in a situation where, you know, he should be able to work that out. But, you know, like I said, they keep shooting themselves in the foot by not, you know, building stars. Also, they just got to work on the storylines. Like, they've got great talent. They just got very terrible, like, storylines where they put these guys in. You know, that's something they definitely need to address.
Yeah, they definitely need to address that. And, yeah, this – it's just – creatively, it's just not good at all. And what we need to – you know, there's a lot of excuses and – there's no reason why your competition, who's going through the same pandemic, is putting out quality stuff. And, yeah, they are developing, but they are also doing very well. So it's just a stale – the writing's stale. The product is stale. You know, I'm not going to say the talent is stale because the talent is there. It's just they need people – who can give them something to work with. And honestly, I've been saying for a while, Vince is out of touch. So he's got to get back in touch and try to reverse the ship. But I am going to actually hop out, but I will be back next week. But I know you guys are going to kill it. So, but I'll see y'all next week though, okay?
Hi, D.
All right, D.
All right, so moving on, I think the one last thing that I want to touch on in regards to Vince McMahon's comments, he was pressed about the ratings after that question and asked, well, Vince, NXT and AEW Dynamite have seemed to rebound from their ratings dip. How can you explain that those shows have rebounded in ratings, but Raw and SmackDown continue to drop? Vince's reaction is that, well, NXT and Dynamite are newer shows. And that's about it. And I know what people are thinking. NXT has been around for years, but from Vince's perspective, I'm pretty sure he meant that NXT is just now premiering on national TV for a little over a year. So yeah, what are your thoughts on those comments? Excuses.
Okay. If you were to ask me which I would rather have as a marketing, advertising, whatever person, between a novelty effect and a 21-year, in the case of SmackDown, were 27 year in the case of Raw following. Give me the followings for 20 plus years. Those are much more of an advantage than any novelty effect could ever be. So yeah, Vince kind of strikes out with this one too. What you think, Nice?
Yeah, like it doesn't matter if they're new. I mean, Raw could be new if you push new stars. That's what NXT and AEW are doing. They're bringing in new stars and introducing new stars. So that's why people want to check in. Plus, the storylines in both of those are a whole lot better than what's on Raw anyway. So yeah, that whole excuse, that doesn't mean nothing. Like, there's no reason why they shouldn't be putting in way more than with being the long-term show than that stuff.
One last thing before we move on. Vince really did have the nerve to still call Raw the highest rated weekly show on the USA Network. Like, the ratings are in the tank, worst of all time. And my homie is still saying, hey, but we're the number one show on the USA Network.
I guess that's whatever. Because y'all don't watch Chrisley enough.
Or, hey, Miz and Mrs. That still come on? Is that a thing? I don't know. Shit, I don't watch. But I would be, I'd be interested to watch more Maurice. Ain't nothing wrong with a little bit Maurice in my life.
Yeah, who wouldn't want to watch that?
Well, before this creeps into Creepcast, because I'm thinking about a recent picture I just saw of Maurice. Let's talk about some news that hit the waves yesterday. So another Vince McMahon issue is the XFL, and the XFL was scheduled to go on auction, but right before the auction, Danny Garcia, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and their partners from Red Capital swooped in and purchased the assets of XFL for $15 million, split evenly between the three of them. Thoughts, gentlemen, on The Rock, Ms. Garcia, and Red Capital as the new owners of XFL?
Did he announce this from the middle of Club La Vila and say, I now own the XFL?
Ballin'!
And I mean, I say that with no disrespect, man, to Danny or any of the other partners at Red Capital, but everybody's going to look at this as The Rock buying the XFL.
Definitely.
Maybe he turns it into Ballers. I don't know. Maybe he turns it into Playmakers. I don't know. But I think between their minds, and I'm definitely including Danny in this, as she is a very intelligent woman, as we've seen, they would not buy the XFL unless they had a plan for it. And given Vince's plans and how they've turned out for WWE in the past 6 years, I'd be willing to bet that the Garcia Johnson Red click has better ideas for it. And who knows? Maybe networks would be more willing to jump behind it because they know that it'll be treated as more than a secondary interest. Because even though Vince, sold stock and everything like that, I mean, wrestling is still Vince's thing. And, when Rock is not acting, he can do parts of it. Danny will obviously be there for it. Red will obviously be there for it. So it being more of a primary interest of theirs probably bodes well for the league, especially if they can keep some of that infrastructure, get Oliver Luck back, and, push forward. Nice?
Yeah, I could agree. I could definitely see networks and sponsors and people like that getting a new hype into the XFL because of The Rock. Because honestly, The Rock at this point in his career, I feel honestly, is a bigger star than the WWE in a whole. So I feel like with his name tied to it, that'll get, you know, new interest to it. And on top of that, I agree that they definitely have a plan because, you know, investors like that just don't buy something without a plan, you know, set forward with it. They got a good start because the XFL wasn't bad this go around. Like they did a lot of good stuff where it was actually entertaining. It was interesting, competitive. So they can stick to that formula and just tweak it a little bit more in their vision. You know, hopefully they don't, you know, do anything, you know, old XFL-ish. Hopefully they, you know, keep it where it's at and kind of build forward with it. But I think it's a great investment, and I'm actually glad that he bought it, that they bought it, I should say, because I hated to see it go because I felt like it had a future. So, and, you know, because it was doing really good before the pandemic hit. So if they can continue that momentum and build forward with it, I think the XFL could actually be really dope.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You know, I think I'll just be the third one to say that there's no way The Rock and Danny Garcia buy this property without a plan. I also agree with what Nice said about The Rock's star right now being bigger than the entire WWE. Definitely believe that. I saw an interesting suggestive tweet yesterday when the news came out, wondering if the purchase of the XFL by The Rock, by Danny Garcia and Red Capital, was some kind of, you know, backhanded deal between Vince McMahon and The Rock. And I'm like, hell no. No way in hell. Rock don't have no reason to do Vince McMahon any favors. You know what I mean? my man comes and goes as he pleases, does what he pleases when it comes to The Rock and the WWE's relationship. And The Rock is a creative mind. Danny Garcia is a creative mind. I think the sky's the limit, you know. It's just unfortunate that the pandemic hit and the first season of the XFL was cut short because I think it could have thrived. I think it could have had success to bring back to that second season. And you get a creative mind like Garcia, like Johnson, with the backing of Red Capital. I didn't really know too much about Red Capital, but I looked into them and they've had a lot of experience with Major League Baseball and ties to the NFL. So that's promising. And the one thing that's not talked about is, you know, technically those TV deals that they had are still active. So, I mean, I'm sure that some things can be renegotiated and whatnot because of the sale. But One other comment that I did see yesterday was somebody said that the XFL sold for more than WCW. And, you know, that's not a surprise because WCW sold for pennies because they didn't have a TV deal. XFL still does. It still has actual assets that they can turn into a product next year. Any thoughts on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could definitely, you know, turn a profit, you know, with the right management, which obviously the owners feel that they have to throw $15 million into it. But yeah, as far as WCW, yeah, Eric Bischoff said on the Monday Night War that what WCW was worth $20 without the TV time. And he probably wasn't that far off, even with the libraries and the footage and the archives and all that. But yeah, I mean, it can really do something. It was finding its niche. And honestly, I think the networks are looking at this like, okay, from Vince McMahon to Dwayne Johnson.
Yes.
Massive yes. upgrade. I mean, Rock passed WWE 2008 at the latest in terms of, so I mean, Vince needs Rock a lot more mm-hmm. than Rock needs Vince. And we could probably name about 5-6 people that have wrestled. Like somebody whose name rhymes with Rock, who Vince needs more than that person needs Vince.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, just looking at it, just wide-ranging perspective, yeah, this could really be a good thing for the XFL.
Are you talking about Brock Lesnar?
Thanks.
Yeah, man, it'll definitely be a good deal for him, man. Like I said, they got time to put a plan together and do any kind of tweaks they need to do, but for the most part, I keep it the same because it was very entertaining before all this popped off. So XFL definitely has a great upside in the future.
And before we move on, let's shout out for two people of color owning a professional yes. sports league.
Yes, straight hand claps.
Yep, for sure.
That's beautiful, beautiful. All right, guys, so we're going to transition into some action from television from the past week. I want to hit on just one thing from each show before we get into our review of the championship reign of Mr. Ron Simmons. I want to run it back to the Raw Women's Championship match that we saw between Sasha Banks and Asuka, where Asuka was distracted by a Bayley beatdown of the departing Kairi Sane and opened the door for Sasha Banks to sneak in and become a 5-time Raw Women's Champion. Guys, what were your reactions of the match, the title change, and the departing Kairi Sane?
Okay, first I'll start off with the match. I mean, it's Asuka and Sasha, so it's not going to be bad. The problem was with the ending reminiscent of John Cena, Edge, and The Authority, where Rollins and company threatened to break Edge's neck unless Cena gave control of WWE back to the Authority. It's just like, really?
Yeah.
And then digging a little bit deeper, if you're the champion, why are you agreeing to no count out?
Right.
You should know something is from that. So, I mean, here we go again. Lack of logic with WWE. I'm the champion. You should have to chase me. These are the rules that I dictate. And you just have to play by them. I mean, going back to someone that we were talking about earlier, Aldis is excellent at this in NWA. Like, if anybody followed along with the storyline with Marty Scurll, Aldis was like, look, I'm the champion over here. You're over there in Ring of Honor. If you are going to come over here and try to take my belt, I'm the dealer, and he really does call himself the dealer. You are going to have to play by these rules. And that's how they set it up. And Skrull accepted. It went on. Of course, Aldis kept the championship. And you know. Why? I mean, it just goes back to devaluing the belt. Why? In the world, does the champion just let, and it's bad writing, like we were talking about before. It's just bad, illogical writing. As far as Kairi Sane goes, I am very, very happy for her. Go home. Be with your husband. You know, live the life It's not even like she left WWE on bad terms. She can come back if she wants to, although I'm not sure she ever wants to see the XFL owner's cousin again. But, you know, she can be an ambassador for WWE, all that other great stuff, be cool, be healthy, be happy, and be home and not have to worry about anything. We should all be so lucky. What you think, Nice?
Yeah, I agree. Carrie Sane for, you know what I'm saying, leaving on good terms. She had a good career, I think, during WWE. NXT Women's Champion, WWE Tag Team Champion. So, yeah, saw a career. And like you said, she can always come back, I'm sure, in the future if she wants. But to the match itself, it's the same thing I said last week. Solid matchup, terrible ending. I don't know why they can't get right with these finishes between Sasha and Asuka, because they put on, they bust their ass for 15, 20 minutes, all for just a terrible ending to what could be a classic match. The finish just deflates the entire match in general. It's just very annoying. And like, I agree too. Like, why would Asuka agree to a no countout match? Countouts can lose the belt match when, you know, if you're the champ, you say no, like, it's my belt. We're going to fight straight up 1-on-1. And if you can beat me, cool. If you can't beat me, then, you know, I'm keeping the belt. But, and then, you know, after you agree to it and you know if you get counted out, you're going to lose the belt, you still run off, you know, seeing your friend get beat down. Like, just terrible, terrible booking. Like I said, they were on to having a really good main event to Raw, but that just killed it. But I will say, I'm glad Sasha got the belt. That's my bae. So
I think that the problem I had is that she's running away to save her friend from getting beat down by one person. You know, this is not 1996 Rey Mysterio getting jumped by the Outsiders. In the back of Nitro. Right. This is one person. This is a 1-on-1 fight between Kairi and Bayley. And Asuka turned around like she was getting jumped by the entire Raw Women's division.
I mean, even if she was getting like if Bayley was really taking it to her, like maybe, you know, she had her pinned in a bad situation, was like, had her head about to slam on something and was like, Asuka, you better come or I'm going to take out your friend. Like, something like that. But it was just a regular, yeah. It was a regular thing. It was nothing special about it.
Mm-hmm. I'll just kind of add my thoughts on Kairi Sane. Man, was excited for her to come into WWE. I'm glad that we got an opportunity to see her first in the Mae Young Classic. Put on some great matches, won the event, and then transitioning over to NXT and having a great run there. I wasn't too excited about her coming up to the main roster because we know how that goes sometimes. But I was glad that she was able to get with Asuka and they were able to form the Kabuki Warriors and have that run as champion. So, yeah, I'm just very fortunate to see somebody in the WWE, see somebody in the States that I didn't think we'd have an opportunity to see. Happy that we got to see some of the matchups that we were able to. Glad that she's happy. Glad that she's, you know, not leaving because of health. You know, she's really returning home to be with her husband and to be happy, which is what, like Benny said, we should all be lucky to do. Do I think we'll see her back in the States? Yeah, maybe here and there, maybe. But maybe all this goes away one day and Triple H and company can press on about their mission to open up other NXTs. And maybe we'll see an NXT out her way. And, you know, she can be the flagship of that women's division, you know, either wrestling and or training. So, yeah, shout out to Kairi Sane. She's definitely going to be sorely missed. let's kind of switch gears to AEW Dynamite. The thing that I want to hit on there is the state of the business address from Maxwell. I didn't know where he was going to go with this. There was a rumor that MJF was going to be going after John Moxley for the belt. I was thoroughly entertained by his address, especially at some of the old time digs. But I was pleasantly, you know, well, I don't want to say surprised, but I was glad when he started to address directly John Moxley and the AEW championship. I think it's time. That's a young cat, great heel, one of the most talented guys on the roster. If you want to build your roster, build your brand around quote-unquote homegrown talent, you can't go wrong with MJF. What you think?
Well, first, nice. I appreciate you correcting the whole no count out, can lose the title on a count out thing, because that was definitely what I meant. As far as MJF, can we just replay what I said last week? Because I told you.
You did, but I was agreeing with you.
That man is awesome. And I'm going to tell you, straight up, any political candidate running against an incumbent, any freshman class, or anybody stepping into a new environment, if you are not using my talent outweighs your tenure as a slogan, you are losing. That is the second best phrase that I have heard all year behind, was that a nerve? That statement made everything. It really did. I couldn't tell you five other words that he said in that entire promo, but those five, yeah, that did it. I'm telling you, honestly, we talked about this man earlier in the show. MJF gives me straight Dwayne Johnson 1998 vibes. And I know people say that, and I'm sorry, people hear that, and it's like, oh, what do you mean? He's not anywhere close, blah, 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 because they think of everything that Dwayne Johnson did from 1999 to 2020. No, just go back in time to 1998 and tell me that you don't see that guy in a smaller and lighter package, because that's what he is. Because remember, Dwayne wasn't that great of a wrestler in 1998 either. So if you want to try to pull that card on MJF, you know, Rock was just bigger. Mm-hmm. But not, I mean, that's who he is. He's 1998 Dwayne Johnson. Will we say the same thing about him as he develops? Will he become 1999 Dwayne Johnson, 2000 Dwayne Johnson, 2001 Dwayne Johnson? That obviously remains to be seen. And honestly, a lot of that has to do with the growth of the company as well as his own growth. But for right now, this snapshot, that's who you got. You got 1998 Dwayne Johnson. Nice.
Yeah, MJF is just, he's on another level right now. Like, he's hitting his total stride in AEW. And that promo, that, you know how everybody's got that promo? Yeah. You know, Austin's got 316. CM Punk got the pipe bomb. Well, I think that was MJF's. I mean, it was that good. Like, he was shooting the shot. He was shooting on. It was a mixture between the character and shooting real life. And yes, I agree with Benny. That slogan, they need to go ahead and put that on the shirt ASAP. Because that was man, that was the line right there. And I guarantee you, that was off the top of his head. That wasn't written. That was MJF in character, shooting on the industry and telling them that, look, I'm the guy. So yeah, I think now is the time to definitely give him a run, because like I said last week, AEW's got to push homegrown guys. You know, they can't keep depending on Jericho and Matt Hardy and John Moxley and guys like that. They got to start pushing, you know, fresh guys like MJF, like Hangman Page, like Ricky Starks, like Darby Allin. Those are guys they need to really get the ball behind and start creating them as stars, because they're going to be fresh. And, you know, all those guys have something special about them, where either they're really good in the ring, they're great on the mic, or they just have like a certain type of aura that fans get behind. But as MJF, I mean, he's ready. I know they might try to push it and hold it a little bit more, but I think he's ready, just because Mox has gotten so stale. I'm ready to see a fresh face of champion, and he's by far your best heel in AEW. So I say, you know, go all in right now.
Right. That was perfect. You ended on all in, you know?
Hey, how's it happen?
So we go from somebody who's chasing the goal to a group of gentlemen who used to have all the goal in NXT. I want to talk about the Undisputed Era real quick. So this past week on NXT, Imperium had a match against a tag team match, which they came out and won. It was a quick match. But afterwards, Undisputed Era hit the ring and attacked Imperium. Complete total beatdown by Cole, by Fish, by the returning O'Reilly, who's beefed up a little bit in this quarantine, and Roderick Strong. And it looked like a statement, trying to make a statement that Undisputed Era, we still run this. But does the Undisputed Era still run NXT? Is there a place still for Undisputed Era in NXT? This is like reminiscent of where we saw them at the beginning. So are we turning back the clock? Are we going to run it back? Or what do you guys see next as possible things that the Undisputed Era can do?
Problem is, they're a king without country right now. Because, I mean, you can't go back and, you know, try to reinsert Cole into the title scene, because it's all but obvious that Karrion Kross has that spot. Say what you want about Cross, whether he deserves it, you know, whether he's ready for it. But, I mean, that's kind of the corner that they've backed themselves into. So they've got to go forward with that. You can't put him on Raw or SmackDown because, well, even with O'Reilly's beefing up, they're still smaller guys. So you can't do that. We've already seen Undisputed Era versus Imperium. So you can't really do that. And it's like, where do you go with them? I mean, and I kind of have a special attachment to them because I was in the audience at TakeOver Brooklyn 3 when the Undisputed Era formed. Of course, I didn't know who they were yet necessarily, but I could tell by the reaction from everybody around me, okay, this is a big deal. And it ended up being a big deal. So keeping that going, yeah, I don't know where you put them. Maybe you throw them into the Raw Fight Club and they beat down everybody. That could possibly be an idea. But, I mean, I just don't know where they go. Maybe Nice will be able to tell us where they go.
Please don't put them on Raw Underground. Lord have mercy. But no, I do agree, though. They've done pretty much all they can do in NXT. Like, they won all the belts multiple times. They feuded with pretty much everybody. Like, the only way you could probably keep them on NXT right now is if you turn them babyface because they've been healed the entire time. But I don't even know if that would even work because they're just generally better heels. So I don't know if a face run in NXT would be good for them. I do agree. You kind of don't want to see them on the main roster because they'll probably get lost, but hopefully they wouldn't. I think personally they probably would be better on Raw just because Raw needs tag teams bad. So I would think they would wind up there. But yeah, they're definitely are kind of stuck in a tight spot right now. It's either go to the main roster or stay on NXT and turn babyface. And neither kind of sound appealing right now, but you know, hopefully they'll figure it out because those are four talented guys that could all go in the ring. Adam Cole's so great on the mic. So I don't know. I just hope whatever the future lies for them, they got a good plan because those guys are way too talented to be set on the back burner or wasted.
God, man, and ain't that a scary thought to wait for WWE to figure something out? Because they ain't too good with figuring things out these days. What about the speculation that this new faction was going to debut on Raw? And I know we're not getting into this week's Raw, you know, this week that we're taping in. But just to kind of jump ahead, where do you think, and I know Nice just said, you know, Raw needs tag teams, which is true, but is that tag team just Kyle O'Reilly and Fish, or do you do the, you know, New Day Freebird thing and incorporate all four of them? If the Undisputed Era was on Raw and they were in that tag team division and it was just two of them, where do you see the other two members mixing up? What happens to Cole? What happens to Roderick Strong?
Okay, so I'm going to go back in time to a moment that I just mentioned. NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3. The debut of the Undisputed Era. Anybody happen to remember who they beat down when they introduced themselves to the world? Uh-huh. It just happens to be the guy who is defending the WWE Championship at SummerSlam. Mm. Wouldn't it be something? And I know this is already too good for WWE Creative, so we may as well just throw it out.
Yo, you putting it out? So, like, we're fantasy booking, knowing that ain't gonna happen. It's too good for it.
Do it.
But wouldn't it be something if 3 years later, the same weekend, if we have the same guy, this time successfully defending a championship, and the same group introducing themselves to the main roster by beating him down once again? That would just be awesome, at least in my opinion. And, you know, maybe, like I said before, maybe I'm just too sentimental about it because I was there. But if you're going to do this, think of how many boxes you check off.
Yep.
Creating new stars, creating a new direction. You've already established this new faction that you were talking about. But no, they won't do it. Why will they not do this?
Yeah, they won't, because it's too easy. You know, that's easy booking. And, I mean, you couldn't write it any better than that. You know, Drew retains, celebrates, Undisputed Era beatdown. Perfect way to end SummerSlam. Perfect way to introduce them to the main roster. But, you know, like we all know, it's too easy booking. They won't do it. They'll probably debut on Raw Underground, and I'll just have my head bowed down. shaking it.
They'll be on Raw Underground. We'll see it. We'll all be pissed. Like, fuck. Well, right. See all four of these guys on Impact in another year. All right, shift the gears to Friday Night SmackDown. The ladies were in the main event. It was Bayley defending against Nikki Cross. Bayley picking up the win, retaining the SmackDown Women's Championship. After which, Nikki Cross is a little frustrated, and she takes it out on her partner, her best friend, Miss Alexa Bliss, and pushes Alexa to the ground. And I think we all saw it coming after she just laid there on the ground. Next thing you know, here comes the Fiend. And the Fiend circles Bliss for a little bit. And then we get the Mandible Claw on Bliss to ride out SmackDown. Thoughts on the main event, guys? Thoughts on direction of Nikki Cross after the match and the Fiend attacking Bliss?
I mean, it follows the nice pattern. You know, this match. Actually, I won't even say that this ending was terrible. It was all right. I mean, as far as Nikki goes, it's about time. The only thing is, though, we know WWE hates heel-heel matchups. So Nikki being a heel leaves her without much direction right now, considering that the main roster titles on SmackDown, both the single and tag team, are held by heels. So it's like, where does she go? Who does she face? I mean, is there even a face on SmackDown? I mean, are we going with Nikki and Naomi? Is this the better that Naomi deserves? Does she get this storyline with Nikki Cross? No. Which we all know is going to be used to elevate Nikki. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, where are they going with this? And I'm going to assume that the Fiend Mandible Claw part was to tug at the heartstrings of Universal Champion Braun Strowman, because his partner in Team Little Big from the Mixed Match Challenge that was watched by 55 people on Facebook was, you know, harmed by the Fiend. Wow, that was actually pretty decent alliteration there on my part. But anyway,
good stuff.
That I guess that's where they're going with this, that it's supposed to make Braun mad. But I mean, Mixed Match Challenge was a long time ago. And I know they've had, you know, bits and pieces together here and there in the interim, but I just don't see this as, you know, the thing that is going to activate the monster among men. I mean, let's tell the truth, Fiend's probably going to win the belt at SummerSlam anyways. I mean, that part. But, I mean, the best thing that maybe can come out of this is that Alexa takes some time off, gains some sympathy, and then comes back to defeat Bayley for the SmackDown Women's Championship, which is a lot for me to say, considering my feelings on Alexa Bliss. But, you know, I mean, it's kind of like that, you know, that five-woman glass ceiling that I talked about last week. If anybody had any question as to who the fifth was, there you go. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. I don't know where they're going with this. I mean, Nikki Cross is clearly better as a heel, so I'm all for a turn. But I agree that they don't have any baby face females on SmackDown at all. Like, you pretty much have Naomi and Alexa Bliss and Carmella. Like, that's it. Everybody else is a heel. So, unless they're going to bring somebody up from NXT to be a face on SmackDown, I don't know what they do here, but I don't know. I guess I'm all for a Nikki Cross heel turn. I guess seek a feud with Naomi, seek a feud with Alexa Bliss, because everybody kind of figured they were going to wind up feuding pretty soon anyway, so there it is. As for this Fiend stuff, yeah, I'm all for getting the belt off Braun Strowman right now, so if that's what this is leading to, then great. Just no more swamp matches. Just go ahead. You know what I'm saying? No more swamp matches. Just have a straight up one-on-one match. Let Fiend win the belt and, you know, get the belt off Braun and try to figure out a new direction with him and try to get some fresh matchups with the Fiend. But SmackDown's got the talent. They're not as bad directive-wise as Raw. Hopefully there's no SmackDown on the ground Friday night, but, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see about that one. But
man, we ain't got a third hour. You know, just SmackDown don't have a third hour.
Don't put it past Vince to try to cram it in there somehow. Don't put it past them. But, I mean, they've got a hell of a talent pool over on SmackDown right now and in-ring work rate guys. So they just got to work on that main event scene and get some females that are going to be baby faces on SmackDown. And I think that show will be okay. But, yeah, I'm all for getting the belt off Braun and putting it on Fiend. How crazy would it be if this is all a scheme, though, where, like, Alexa Bliss winds up actually being down with the Fiend and this is all set up and she goes heel and sides with them? That could be pretty cool.
That'd be interesting. I'd be for it.
She could be the Sister Abigail that they were looking for years ago.
Say the truth. Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss as baby faces have always been an issue for me. I prefer both ladies as heels. But then, like you said, nice, you know. Well, no, Benny said it. SmackDown women's roster is nothing but heels except for Naomi and Jesus, I can't even think. Well, Naomi and those two ladies. Everybody else?
Carmella.
Carmella doing some, what's that movie? 50 Shades of Grey stuff with Corey Graves, man. Hey, she got to come back and show her face to be counted. But we're going to move on. That's all we're going to cover from last week on television and spend the rest of our time talking about the great Ron Simmons, fellas. Sunday on August the 2nd was the anniversary of Ron Simmons becoming the WCW champion and being the first ever African-American world heavyweight champion. That happened in Baltimore, Maryland on WCW main event. Ron Simmons beat Vader. Ron was actually replacing an injured Sting in that match. So good night for him to show up to the building and have his boots ready. Guys, so for me, I wasn't watching wrestling in 92. I started watching wrestling when I was about 4 or 5, 88, 89 as a kid. Then I took a break, around 90, 91. Around 91. Right before Flair left, and didn't come back until late 96. So I actually missed this. My first recollection of Ron Simmons was actually when he debuted in the WWF wearing that stupid helmet shit. So is that the same with you guys? When was the first time that you were aware of Ron Simmons as a professional wrestler?
Well, I was still watching, so I remember Doom with him and Butch Reed. Actually, they were the one, if I remember correctly, I want to say they were the ones, it was either them or Nikita Koloff and somebody who interrupted my favorite match of all time, the one between Sting and Luger and the Steiners. I want to say it was Doom, but at any rate, I remember Ron Simmons being with Butch Reed and Doom. I don't think I was really paying attention to WCW at that point when he won. I remember hearing about it, and it was like, okay, you know, cool. But it wasn't, to me, along the lines of, you know, Doug Williams winning the Super Bowl or anything like that. So, you know, I was like, okay, you know, nice footnote, whatever. I'm going back to watch, you know, I guess it was Bret Hart at that time. But yeah, I fell out of wrestling not too much later. It had to have been, say, 93 maybe. And I think that was when everybody fell out because wrestling just went into a nadir. And then I fell back in summer 97 when all of a sudden I see Sting looking like the Crow coming down from the ceiling and beating everybody up every week. So maybe that was part of why he won in 92. Maybe Bill Watts saw that, you know, okay, things are going really, really bad. So what are we going to do? We're going to put it on the black guy. You know, kind of like American voters decided to do in 2008. Oh, you know, the country's going bad. You know, all these banks and financial institutions and whatnot are getting scarred up. What are we going to do? We're going to give it to the black guy. It's kind of like Marazio Vance was saying, you know, well, you know, George Bush didn't even, you know, change the oil in America for 8 years. But then decided to give this broken down thing to Barack. Hopefully we don't get censored like YouTube does with the political stuff. But it just seemed like a good tangent to go on. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's just maybe that's why, because wrestling did go into that in the beer. So maybe Watts thought that was the best way to save it. Yeah, so I mean, it's cool, but I don't really know how much it meant. Maybe it meant a little bit more to Nice than it did to either of us, Sean. Let's find out.
Yeah, I was that kid in the front row jumping around when Ron won. Except I was at the crib. I remember watching it. And, yeah, I remember Ron from Doom. And Doom, probably one of the most underrated tag teams in the history of wrestling. Not just WCW, but wrestling. Like, they don't get their flowers enough like they should, because they were actually a really, really good tag team. I mean, they were there, you know what I'm saying, before Harlem Heat, right there when, you know, the Road Warriors were getting popular, just a big, badass tag team that just looked like they were just going to kick the shit out of you as soon as they came out, you know, out the curtain. So Doom was a really good team. But with Ron, yeah. I remember watching that match. I was, 92. I was 12 then. So, yeah, I literally had the same reaction as that kid because, you know, it was kind of like how it was these days where I just didn't feel like the black man was going to win. So I'm like, oh, Vader's going to win because this is a replacement from Sting, because at the time Sting was the golden boy. So you just figured that he was going to be the one to win. So when Sting was out and Ron got the win, I'm like, okay, they'll just have a solid match. Vader's going to win, and nobody will take the belt off Vader until Sting's back and ready. So when Ron hit that power slam, man, and it was a delayed reaction for me. Like, that kid in the front row, that guy, he knew it. Like, he started jumping immediately at the three count. Me, I had to kind of look for a minute, like, wait a minute. Did that just happen? And when the replay hit, I was like, oh. And then I'm going crazy, just jumping around like, yeah. So – yeah, Ron winning, that was big, man, because, you know, it at that time, it, you know, it's same as it is now. You know, you just don't see us winning that many championships, especially not the main one. Mm-hmm. So, and especially in WCW, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But it was really good to see that. You know, it was a good, probably one of my first feel-good moments like that in wrestling, seeing, you know, Ron get his flowers like that. And It was a good, you know, people don't even talk about it. It was actually a good match, too. If you go back and watch it, like, him and Vader were having a good big man match. So, yeah, it was awesome seeing Ron win that, you know, and going back and reminiscing on that great moment. Glad to see Ron in the history books.
I don't think there's too many, you know, I don't think anybody would argue if somebody was going to be the first, that Ron Simmons was the best choice for that. You know, I hate that my first, you know, before I say what I was about to say, knowing that I did miss that time period in professional wrestling from late 91 to mid to late 96, Ron Simmons winning the title and missing, you know, Doom are up there with the things that I regret that I missed. But, and I really didn't have the chance to see any of that until WWE Network came along. So I had seen the championship match, which I will, you know, agree with Nice. It was a real good big man match between Vader and Ron Simmons. But then again, we're talking about Vader and Ron Simmons, you know, two of the best, you know, bigger men to ever do it in the ring. So while I'm, you know, kind of sad that I really didn't get to see it live because of my time away, I'm glad to be able to, you know, talk about it now and, you know, have access to his matches. So I wasn't able to see the title reign. And even now, up until the last week, I had only seen the title match that he won. I've actually, before this past week, I've never seen the title defense. I never saw the match that he lost the belt. I wanted to go back and do a little research and, you know, see how his title reign went and, you know, kind of talk about that, go over it with you guys and see your reaction and step-by-step of that process and how you felt his overall reign as champion went. So just to kind of kick it off, Ron had his first title defense at the Clash of Champions on September 2nd. He successfully defended the title against Cactus Jack. Later in that show, Cactus Jack revealed the return of Simmons' tag team partner in Doom, Butch Reed. Butch Reed wasn't back to tag or celebrate with his former partner. He was back looking to get a world championship match from his tag team partner. But for the most of September, Ron teamed with Sting, the man he replaced in the championship match, and Nikita Koloff against Rick Rude, Jake Roberts, and the Super Invader. I know y'all remember the Super Invader. Simmons had several matches with Rick Rude. I was able to look back at a couple of those matches. Great chemistry in the ring with both of those two gentlemen. On the September 26th edition of WCW Saturday Night, Simmons teamed with Barry Windham to complete in a tag team match against Jake Roberts and the Barbarian. Simmons and Windham won by DQ. But after the match, Barbarian attacked Simmons. And prior to me doing this research, I didn't know that the Barbarian actually had a WCW championship match on a pay-per-view. So the Barbarian faced Ron Simmons at the 1992 Halloween Havoc for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship, which Ron Simmons won with a power slam. But guys' reaction, you know, see early on, Ron Simmons mixing it up with the likes of Jake Roberts, Rick Rude, but then has this random title match against Barbarian. Did you know about it? Did you see it? What were your thoughts?
Okay, so up to this point, Jake Roberts, Rick Rude, Cactus Jack, the Barbarian. None of them would win a title for, what, 6 years? And, of course, the only one of them to ever win a world title was Cactus Jack. Mm-hmm. WCW's reaction to Cactus Jack winning that title was pretty much the same way that they thought about Cactus winning that title over Ron Simmons in 92. They never considered him championship material. They never considered any of those guys to be championship material. So it's kind of like all these reigns that we have where, okay, we're going to try to build this up a little bit. You see it with WWE every year after WrestleMania. You know, we're going to build this person, and then they're going to get this, you know, 3-4 month build. So we're going to put, you know, these, sorry, Dolph, but Dolph Ziggler types in these title matches we know the champion's going to retain. Well, it happened with Dolph this year. If I remember correctly, it might have happened last year too. But
that's been Dolph's career. You got it right.
But, you know, but we're going to build this. So it seems like that's what they were doing with Ron. But you notice, he didn't have, like, the main guys to beat.
Yeah.
And I'm going to admit, I don't know Ron's championship history. I'm sure we're going to get to it. But I'm going to take a pretty educated guess that the first real opponent he faced, he lost to. Nice?
Yeah. I somewhat agree with that. It does. It feels like a WWE booking where, like, they build a guy, he wins it finally, and then they give him, like, mid-card talent to feud with to begin the title reign. But I will say this, Rick Rude actually was a former world champion, but he was a good one to have. And you couldn't really have a bad match with Rick Rude. I mean, that guy was just great in the ring.
Yeah.
You can see that through Jake in there just because – ex-WWE guy. Cactus was a good mid-carder at the time, but probably wasn't at the level of world title, but they were probably short on the heels back then, which is probably another reason why they didn't, what I threw Cactus in the mix. Now, I go lie, that is the first. I did not know, as much as I've watched wrestling over the years, that the Barbarian actually fought for a championship, especially at a pay-per-view. So that's actually a... Sounds like a good one, a good find there, Sean. Yeah, I could see where if you would have had a better lineup of heels, they probably would talk more about his reign to this day. Because when people talk about Ron winning, they don't talk about the reign. They just talk about the win.
Yeah.
They just, you know, they don't talk about who he defended against. They don't talk about classic matches. All they talk about is Ron winning. You know, if he would have fought Vader a few more times, maybe you turn Lex Luger heel, you fuse with Lex Luger, maybe if you fuse with Ric Flair, you know, if you got like those kind of guys, they probably would talk about the reign more. But yeah, it's looking at that cast of guys, I can see why they don't really talk much about Ron's reign as WCW champ.
And nice, that was a nice little segue into my last a little bit on his reign and something that you both said, and especially that last thing that Benny said is about to go down. So going into November, Ron was scheduled to team with Robbie Walker. I don't even know who the hell that is. At Clash of Champions. Clash of Champions against Cactus Jack, the Barbarian, and Tony Atlas. Walker was replaced by Too Cold Scorpio, who made his surprise debut and won a match with Simmons to effectively end that feud between Simmons and Cactus Jack, Barbarian. On the November 28th edition of Saturday Night, Simmons defeated Paul Orndorff in a WCW championship match by countout. due to Rick Rude delivering a power driver on the floor. And then we go, keep on going at a house show. I think this might be one of the, oh no, I spoke too soon, gentlemen. There was a big house show at the Omni at the end of November. Simmons' team was Sting and Van Hammer, along with Dustin Rhodes, to take on Vader, Cactus Jack, Rick Rude, and Barry Windham. I'm sorry. Like, even in this short space that I've talked going through November, that's already two situations that they put him in, handicap situations. You got 2-on-3s, 3-on-4s a couple of times. That's wild. On December 12th edition of WCW, Saturday night, Rick Rude issued an open challenge and then quickly challenged Ron Simmons instead for a fight at Starrcade. But an injury to Rick Rude prevented that from happening, so Ron Simmons defended the championship against Dr. Death Steve Williams. Good Lord. That was a Starrcade match, which ended in a double countout, but the decision was reversed and given to Simmons when Williams continued to attack Simmons after the bell. The following night in Philadelphia, hey, that was the day that Ron Simmons was scheduled to drop the WCW championship, but his opponent no-showed the event. But on December 30th in Baltimore, Maryland, that same opponent that didn't show up showed up that night, same place that Ron Simmons won the title, Baltimore, Maryland, and that person defeated Ron Simmons for the WCW championship, ending Simmons' reign. And like Benny said, that person was Vader. Oh, that's full circle for your ass. You win the title in Baltimore, Maryland against Vader, and then almost 5 months later, you come back to Baltimore, you drop it back to him.
You've got to be kidding me. So they basically just took an eraser to the whole thing. I mean, it's almost like reconstruction.
Yeah.
I mean, just took it all. No. It's like, no. This just did not happen. Just, no, we're going to just wipe it all out and start fresh. It's like Chris Jericho's championship reign the one time V Triple H was champion for like 45 minutes. Like, no, it just never happened. I mean, but the thing is, you can't take away that original moment.
Okay.
You can't take it away from Nice. You can't take it away from that kid in the front row or from any of the black people who were in the arena that night or who saw it on television. It happened. You know, you can't throw it away. You can't undo it. You know, you can't undo it if you're Bill Watts. You can't undo it if you're creative of WCW. You can't undo it if you're, you know, Triple H in Chris Jericho's case. You can't undo it if you're Resident Tramp, even though you've been trying for 3.5 years. No, you can't do it. It still happened. It's still a great moment in wrestling history. The only thing in that context that even comes close is Kofi winning at Mania last year. Sorry, Dwayne. But that's the only thing that really comes close. And I mean, shoot, to us, yeah, Ron Simmons. But to the kids who are growing up now, you know, they got that same feeling from Kofi because they weren't alive, obviously, when Ron won. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just thing, no matter how badly it may have gone, and we just found out it went pretty badly, you know, that moment's going to stay with us forever. It's still written in the history books.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, congratulations to Ron. And this will probably be the one time that I ever mention this, you know, on air. But hey, congratulations to my fellow Florida State graduate. And
ooh.
God, I'm going to wash my mouth. That was so bad after that.
Yeah.
Anyway, nice. Go ahead.
Man, yeah, you look at that rain. Yeah, it's like I said before. They just didn't really give Ron much. I mean, they did what they could, I guess. But, you know, he fought Paul Orndorff, you know, count out. He fought Dr. Death, count out. Like, come on, man. Ron Simmons can't beat those two guys.
Yeah.
Like give him a clean victory, man, you know? But, of course, you know, as soon as, you know, Vader was back and ready to go, they just threw the belt back on him. It's funny how, like, the booking we complain about now still happened back in those days. I guess we were just too young to realize it, but that book has been going on for years. But it's like Benny said, you know, you can't erase that memory. We still talk about it, you know, all these years later. One of the first and biggest feel-good moments for Black wrestling. And it'll never go away and forever be celebrated. And, you know, it was just a great moment. And, you know, got big ups to Ron for that one, man. And, you know, as much as we hate the booking of it, big up to WCW and Watts for at least giving them a chance. Mm-hmm. So that's what's up.
Yeah, I just think it was just, you know, really – You both booked it without even knowing. You know what I mean? You knew I was about to read some guys' names who were middle of the card. And you knew that the first big name that he went one-on-one with, that's who he's going to lose it to. And, you know, going through this process, looking back at the reign, that's the thing that stuck out to me was that there's not a lot of one-on-one matches in here. It's a lot of tags, a lot of handicaps, a lot of countouts, a lot of disqualifications. You want to give big ups to Bill Watts, because I will say, historically, you know, Bill Watts says, you know, always had the philosophy of having representation, you know. Even if it's just that one person, you know, at least he was trying to get some color, some diversity, you know, wherever he was booking. And I don't think any other booker that we're aware of from WCW, and you all know there's a lot of bookers when it comes to WCW. I don't know anybody else that would have took that chance on a Black performer and giving them a run with the belt. So speaking from that, yeah, I'm glad anyone who got to experience that when it happened had that opportunity. Not only did it, you know, resonate at home to many fans, but it's also gone to, you know, inspire others to walk in his shoes and, you know, become professional wrestlers themselves. You know, we see on television all the time, Mark Henry and all those guys, you know, talking about Ron Simmons a lot, giving praise to the man as an inspiration to them. So I'm going to call it what it is. The damn title reign was ass. But the man Ron Simmons is a GOAT. He a GOAT human being. To me, he's been you know, one of our best. I still hate that I'm hating on Nice because he had the opportunity to see Ron Simmons as Ron Simmons. And Benny had the opportunity to see Doom. And I had to see him in a fucking gladiator outfit as my first.
No terms.
Yeah, I'm jealous of y'all of having that those Doom and, you know, solo memories. And I got the damn gladiator. But you know what? The gladiator didn't last long. And, man, did Ron Simmons damn near get me in a whole lot of trouble in school when he started that Nation of Domination shit. You know, still, like, we don't talk enough about the Nation of Domination. And those fire promos that Ron Simmons hit are still one of my favorites to these days. So big ups to Ron Simmons. I'm glad we had the opportunity to look back at his championship reign today. Hopefully we'll have other opportunities. Hell, we're going to do something on Nation of Domination real soon. So definitely be on the lookout for that. But gentlemen, that'll be about wrap it up for us this week. Tell everybody where they can follow you.
Well, for me, it's, you know, Oigo Las Voces on Twitter. And of course, that kind of leans into who I'm going to be rooting for in that title match at SummerSlam if you know enough Spanish to translate.
If they don't know, Google Translate is a thing.
Yep.
Yeah, y'all can check me out. All formats, DJ Nice One, NYCEONE. Talk music, talk wrestling, talk whatever, man. I'm all about it.
Good deal. And it's your boy, Sean. You can hit me up on Twitter at Shaolin Shogun MA and Instagram at just Shaolin Shogun. And this is The Push, and we will be back at you next week. Peace.